recruiting has become the number one thing. And we want to always keep that recruiting pipeline filled because we're always looking for really solid culture fits and people that want to learn. And that doesn't just happen when you're in the hiring mode. So you've always got to be thinking about that. And you have to have a recruiting and a hiring process that matches it. So what we've done, because we struggled with it just like any company, but we've got a process that we're pretty happy with now. And it really starts with a video. So what we tell people is that when you want to apply or you're interested in the organization, whether you were referred in or you came in through an ad, we will ask you for a 2-minute video about why you're a good fit for the Vested Group. And that's all the instruction that we give.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Courtney Dominguez.
Joel Patterson, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
Thank you, Courtney. Glad to be here.
It's been a while. So tell me a little bit about, obviously tell the listeners about your background and also about the Vested Group.
Sure, happy to. So Courtney and I have known each other for a lot of years and have done a lot of work together over the years, even though it's been a little while.
You're aging us.
But I am a... Yes, yeah, for sure. So I have been in the ERP space for over 20 years. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's basically enterprise software and really the process of developing requirements and working with companies to define who they want to be, what their future state really looks like, and then implementing a system to support that growth and that expansion in all phases of their business, whether it's accounting and financials or order taking. And we work a lot with industrial manufacturing companies. So we get to work with a lot of companies that are doing some really cool things, making new products, but also companies that have been doing the same thing for a lot of years. Like we've got a company that makes electrical cable. So, for homes. So there's a good variety of companies that we like to work with. The cool thing about this industry, and you and I got to work together a long time ago, implementing these systems for various companies. And so, yeah, that's that. I'm actually working on my second company now. Started a first one in 2001 and had some failure with that company. And that's really what got me to where I am now. And that company, we had a lot of early growth and a really cool culture at the beginning, but that kind of fell apart as we grew and we didn't know why. And that really became the impetus of the Vested Group to make it all about the culture and really believing that the way to run a successful business is to make sure that your people are happy. And that's really what we've come to do.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I know creating culture has been really important to your company. It's been critical to, you know, the success of your business. So what are some of the things that you've done to cultivate that and how are you, you know, keeping people happy?
Yeah, it is truly the number one thing. So with the last company, like I was saying, we grew and then all of a sudden we became very virtual. And as soon as we became an organization where we couldn't keep tabs on everything that was going on with everyone, it's sort of, we just lost that connection. And with this one, what we've decided first is that we want everybody to be together as much as possible. That's not always going to, especially these days, that's not always possible, right? It's people working remotely or people just located somewhere else. And so then it became about, well, how do we be intentional about that? How do we make sure that our culture is meant to be, regardless if they live in Dallas where we're based or else in the country? And there's a lot of things that one of the main key drivers of it for us is around this concept of coaching. So we've really tried to change how we interact with our people, how supervisory relationships function, all of those things that people are used to in normal business. We want them to be less about telling people what to do and more about helping our people become better versions of themselves and allowing our managers to really focus on, hey, how do I invest in my team, as opposed to how do I tell my team what to do and how do I constantly worry about whether or not they're getting their stuff done? How do I actually invest in them so that they become more self-driven? They know more about where their blind spots are, where their strengths reside. So we've done a lot around coaching, and we have multiple people that help us with that, in that we have one person that's focused on StrengthsFinder, if you've ever heard of that. It used to be Clifton StrengthsFinder, and now Gallup actually purchased them. And that's a really nice, easy way for people to learn about themselves, right? And like my top five strengths are learner and input and competition and futuristic, and I can't remember the other one. But learner being at the top is really important for me because I do, that's who I am. I love learning about new things, right? And just being able to identify what that is through this coaching process really allows people to, oh yeah, I'm good at that. I didn't even think about that, but I'm good at it. And same with the bottom strengths. So that's one way to really sort of very delicately walk into this kind of coaching process. And the other one is that we actually have a process to find a 12-week process that people go through called authentic leadership. And that is really about recognizing who they are as a person and really understanding what their limiting beliefs might be. And then that were developed over time through coaches or through teachers or parents, but then really trying to understand who your authentic self is. And it sounds like it's more personally focused than it is, but we're believers in that this work-life balance thing that doesn't really exist anymore is just, it's almost a term that is negative because it separates the two and it makes it seem like one is bad and the other is good.
Right.
And what we want to say is that they're completely interconnected and there's no way that you can have a successful business professional life if you're miserable personally and vice versa, and just recognizing that they do impact each other and allowing people to step into that and try to learn about what they've got going on. And we found that really does improve engagement and productivity and all the things that you want your people to be through a simple process that they have to be willing to go through, but really is something that we invest in them and we've done so far.
So obviously you're seeing very positive impact, right? By having this program and have you seen, are your employees really, you know, are they embracing it and they kind of appreciate the journey that I guess that they go on through this process?
Yeah, it really throws people off at first. Like it is because it is unique and it sometimes people think, it sounds a little new agey. I'm not sure I'm really bought into that. But as we've rolled it out to more people and we've got people that have taken it, talk about it with other people and recognize that, hey, this is really just about you improving yourself. It's been very well received. There, so much so that the people, they kind of come out of the woodwork once they've got it and say, hey, this has really changed my life. And that sounds really grand. So I don't want to say that this is going to change everything you've got going on, but for some people it does.
Sure.
And for others, just the knowledge of knowing who they are and how they've become that way really allows them to shift gears and be who they want to be. So from a business perspective, what that really has done is allow us to really keep an eye on our attrition and turnover. You know this, our industry is very high turnover. Mm-hmm. There's always, usually back when I used to work for Arthur Andersen, right? So for Big Four kind of things, there was always somebody in one of those big six companies that was throwing out money trying to recruit as many people as they could, right? And that would get people bouncing around. And we don't want that. We want people to really be engaged in our business, be engaged with our clients and their colleagues. And we also feel like replacing somebody is $100,000 to $150,000 effort. So it's not cheap. So for us, this just going through the process, investing in our people, making sure that they are connected and engaged, there's a real dollar value that's tied to that. And so when you're in an industry with typical 15% turnover and you can keep that to 4 or 5, I mean, there's real dollars there. And that's really what we want to do. Now the dollar side of this is a great benefit. This is really more about investing in our people. And that's just, it's kind of fun. You know, it's really the right way to run your business. And so we keep our focus on that, but the fringe benefits are really significant, right?
Yeah.
And especially during this COVID time, you know, just like everyone, we've been a company that prides itself on culture. There's really, I've not found a way that we can inject or share our culture with people over a Zoom call, mm-hmm. right? You and I have a relationship, even though we haven't really spoken for a long time, several years. The fact that we had a formal relationship, we can just jump right back into it, right? And it's no big deal at all. And that's the kind of thing that we want to make sure we've got here is that even if I don't see somebody for a year, I have that relationship developed with them where we can be old friends in no time.
Right.
And we want to be able to do that at work too, especially when you get into these projects that can be very challenging. Clients, this is a lot of change that we bring to a client, and they don't like it a lot of the time. You know, they know it's a necessary thing to go through, but it's not fun and it's not easy. And so when our people are in those environments where they can get very challenging and sometimes even aggressive, you want them to have that bond that allows them to be effective even in a difficult situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So attrition rates in the technology sector tend to hover around 13%. And in large companies, it can be, you know, upwards around 23%. So, you know, Google, Yahoo, some of the big ones have very high attrition rates. Talk to me a little bit about, I guess, the culture, or not just the culture, but hiring into this culture, right? I mean, I'm sure that when you're hiring these folks in that, you know, you think a lot about how they're going to fit. And, you know, I've heard other people talk about how that's probably even more important than, you know, having the right skill set. You can teach skills, but you can't necessarily teach somebody to fit into a culture. You know, they have a personality. So how do you go about making sure that you're getting the right people and when you're hiring into the organization?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, recruiting has become the number one thing. And we want to always keep that recruiting pipeline filled, because we're always looking for really solid culture fits and people that want to learn. And that doesn't just happen when you're in the hiring mode. So you've always got to be thinking about that. And you have to have a recruiting and a hiring process that matches it. So what we've done, because we struggled with it just like any company, but we've got a process that we're pretty happy with now. And it really starts with a video. So what we tell people is that when you want to apply or you're interested in the organization, whether you were referred in or you came in through an ad, we will ask you for a 2-minute video about why you're a good fit for the Vested Group. And that's all the instruction that we give. And it's funny how over time you see the differences in how people prepare for that. You know, do they mention your core values and purpose? Are they just reading from a script? Mm-hmm. It's not that there's a wrong answer. It's that you pick up on who this person kind of is by how they respond to it. And when you've watched 100 of them, you can really tell the difference. Now, sure. Sometimes we have videos of people that have worked out really well. The video wasn't great. Different personality types. And you take all that into account. But as long as they have made the effort, because we have some people who will try and then they just give up and then they remove themselves from applying. And that's, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. And that saved everyone time, right? But if they do a decent job on that, we'll have them in and then they go through a 3-step process from there. They'll go through 3 different interviews to make sure that they are that culture fit. And what we ask our people is about something we call the Sunday test. So when you're interviewing this person, and you may not know a lot about them, but certainly when you're sitting down with them, you're going to get some level of a vibe. If that person were to ask you to say, hey, I'm behind. I really need some help on Sunday. Can you come in and help me out? And yeah, you just met this person, but what does your instinct tell you? Does it tell you that this is the type of person that you're going to want to help out?
Or be with on a Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, because that may not be the best use of your time, right?
That's right.
But if you feel that desire, that interest to help that person, then they pass the Sunday test. And it's very simple for people to understand, but it is maybe the most important piece of that. Because you can learn the skill, but you can't necessarily learn how to be a good culture fit. That's really about being authentic and being who you are.
I feel like we've spent some Saturdays, Sundays, late nights, a lot of those together. if you go back to the Anderson days.
Yes, for sure. And think about those are the times, those are the memories that you remember. It's kind of miserable sometimes in the middle of it, but those are the things you look back on. And you're like, man, that was actually kind of fun. Even though it was hard, we had a good time and those are important.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's a couple of Sundays I can remember that maybe that's not what I wanted to be doing at the time, but I look back on it now with fond memories. So those are the ones that stick, not the Monday, Tuesday, you know, Monday through Friday. It's the Saturdays and Sundays. So tell me a little bit, you mentioned virtual culture in the beginning, you know, having a kind of an environment where things were more virtual. And obviously over the past year, lots of things have been more virtual, whether we liked it or not. And I know, you know, in your culture, you like everybody to be close together, but obviously over the past year, that wasn't probably the case where most people could be together. So how did you keep the company culture and keep, I guess, that feeling of being together when you couldn't be together? How did you, you know, make sure that you were still addressing that even over the difficult time over the past year?
Yeah, so we certainly changed what we were doing and how we were going about it. And you're right. I mean, I've continued to come into the office the whole time, and a lot of days I was here by myself. And it was really just because I liked the energy of it, and it felt like I needed that to be an effective leader. But what we quickly realized is that we needed to shift a little bit. I mean, the overall messaging is still the same, but how we deliver it, how often we deliver it, a lot of that needed to be modified. So what we've done is we've, over the last year, really focused on four things. Transparency, in that what we tell people and how we tell them, nobody expects us to have all of the answers going into what's happened over the last year, but they do have every expectation that you are doing everything you can to find them and to come up with a way for us to get through this. And so that has been key, in that we have not once said, hey, we've got all the answers for this. It's more about, this is what we're trying. This didn't work, but this is what we're trying now, and it is working, and continuing that process until we find things that have done what we needed them to do. So transparency is one. Providing purpose is very critical, in that if people are bored or they're slow, or that's the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds great for some people, like, oh, well, I can just sit around and do nothing. But when you're alone at your house and you don't have that regular contact and you feel like you just aren't fulfilling what you need to do, chances are you're getting a lot of negative emotion from that. So having purpose, and that just means work in a lot of ways, is important. Communication is the third one, and that's really in both directions, just making sure that we're communicating. One of the major things that I've changed in the last year is I started doing a weekly video. Every Friday, or sometimes it comes out over the weekend, but I'll send out a less than 10 minute video to the whole company. Just, hey, this is what we've got going on. And I've gotten really good feedback from that. And that's something that, yeah, I'll continue to do even long-term, every week. If we don't have our monthly meeting, they'll get a video. And then the final thing is fun. Just having a good time and finding ways for people to connect. You know, early on, we were a lot of virtual happy hours and things like that. And we've had to get a little bit more creative to make sure that people are engaged. But you've got to do that. If they don't have that opportunity to talk outside of work somehow, you're going to lose some of those connections. So transparency, purpose, communication, and fun are really the main things that we've focused on in the last 9-10 months.
I think communication has been really critical for everybody, really, because, you know, it is so easy to fall into your behind your video, behind your screen, and not really connecting with people and not asking, you know, how are you doing? How, you know, making sure people are okay. And I think that more and more, I'm hoping that's one of the things that really sticks coming out of this, is that people, you know, are really empathetic and trying to make sure that everybody's, you know, all right and reaching out. Because, you know, I just feel like that's a lot harder to do when you're not sitting next to somebody in the office and you don't see them coming in and having a bad day, or, you know, because it's just easy to turn your camera off and say, you know, I'm having a bad day and leave me alone.
And that is tough. And that's the thing that I don't think we've got an answer for yet. Although there are some, you know, there's some very 1984-ish thought police products coming down the pike, where, you know, they'll analyze your posture or your facial expressions and things, and really give you kind of a, hey, is everything okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a weird one. I don't know exactly how I feel about that yet, because sometimes you do just have a bad day and you don't necessarily need an AI calling you out on it, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Courtney's in a permanently bad mood. Just leave her alone for the next month.
Yeah, that's just my face.
Right? Exactly.
So, you know, we'll see how that ultimately plays out. But that is the piece that I think is still missing from the new work from home world, is how are we dealing with people that are having a rough day or consistently having a rough day? How do we keep them engaged? We don't have all the answers for that yet. But the one thing I do know is it's going to take intention, right?
Yes.
Nobody's just going to be able to fall into that. You're going to have to do things that are intentional, of you reaching out and making sure that your people are okay.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think it's very, it's, you know, you making sure that you're doing those things, because it's just not going to happen on its own. So, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to transition back into the office sometime soon, and things will get back to whatever normal is, you know, going forward. So it's probably not going to be exactly the same, but I'm sure, like I said, I hope there's a few of these things that really do stick, because, you know, Zoom happy hours are fun, but regular happy hours are a good time as well. So it'd be good to get back to those.
And I'm okay with, like, you know, going to restaurants and people, the wait staff still wearing masks.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
that some of these things are okay too. So
yeah, we'll absolutely.
See. We'll see how they play out.
I'm a big fan of the QR codes for the menus. I really like to have that on my phone, and I don't want to touch totally a dirty menu. So I'm all totally good with that. That can stay around for a long time as far as I'm concerned. So it's all good.
I'm with you.
So let's talk about diversity. So diversity in tech, I mean, this has been an issue forever. There's a lot of statistics that show that it really hasn't even gotten that much better. Although, you know, I know a lot of companies make efforts to do that. In December, Harvard Business Review published an article that said that tech companies really need to start thinking, you know, outside of those tech hubs, right? They need to start thinking outside of New York, California, Massachusetts, and move to where the talent is clustered. And I think now more than ever, you know, a lot of people, you're seeing these people leaving some of the big cities and going to where they have more space and being able to get out and have a yard. And Texas was actually highlighted as one of those areas where, you know, there's a very high, the tech diversity scale is what they call it at the HBR. So you happen to be located in Texas as well. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what you think needs to be done as far as creating a culture that's inclusive and increasing the, you know, increasing the diversity in IT.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting problem. My background is I've got siblings that are African-American. So I grew up kind of in that world. And it was interesting when all the social justice stuff started happening this year, how, you know, throughout my life, I'd always kind of put myself in a different category because of my background. And what I realized this year, that's not right. There's still, you know, assumptions that I make or maybe certain things that get said that I don't even take into account that might be creating issues. So I think we've all learned, hopefully everyone's learned something this year. But I think that the biggest thing when it comes to our industry is really just going back to being intentional. You know, when we're in, like even right now, we're in active recruiting mode. And when I look at the people that we've got on our list that we're talking to right now, there's a lot of white male. And it's not because we don't want to talk to women or to minorities. That's not the case at all. A lot of times that we just don't get applicants. And so what we've done is we are intentionally reaching out to people that we believe we could recruit and would be a good fit and create some diversity for us internally because we want that. I mean, I like diversity. Diversity is really kind of what brings new ideas and you know, it's a good thing. So we're just having to be a little more intentional than what we were before. And our numbers are pretty decent. We just looked at them. And so we are about a third women, just under 33%. And we are just under 25% minority. And for, you know, on the grand scale, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, even the 33%, you know, if the world is half women and half men, then, you know, we're trailing pretty far behind on just that. So for us, I do see improvements on both sides, on minorities in IT as well as women. Those numbers seem to be going up, but there's still a long way to go. And I think a lot of it is just making people understand that this is a good industry for them. I think for the long time, because we were a high travel industry, women would tend to fall out of that, especially if they were in their time for potentially having
family,
kids.
Right.
Yeah. And nowadays there's so much, like we've got women here. We've got one that just came back from her second maternity leave. And it's worked great. You know, we're able to modify some of how she works. Even before COVID, she was doing a lot of work from home. She wants to stay engaged in the company and keep working. So we want to support that. And she was one of our first hires and, was a functional consultant. Now she's a developer. I mean, she's done all these great things and we want her out talking to people. We want her out talking to kids and really supporting that. We've got a couple of ladies here that started an IT for women networking group because there aren't a lot of those running around. They actually launched that last month. So those are the kind of things I think that it's going to take that to get people excited about the industry and to let them know that this is a good industry for them. Because the thing you can do here that you can't do in most is you can learn so much about business and how companies are run, where they struggle, because you get to bounce around a lot. And so for anybody that likes a little excitement, a little volatility in what they do, excitement, people that are outside of IT are like, excitement. Really?
Exactly.
But for those of us in it, it is exciting. There is a lot of really cool things that can be done. And we just need to continue to push that out and get out there and talk to, especially the kids that are coming up through the ranks right now and let them know what reality is.
You know, I think right now it's such a great time for kids because there's so many STEM options that they don't even know, you know, that they're learning, and they don't even realize that they're kind of in that IT space. You know, I see a lot of my daughter's friends and they're doing Roblox or they're doing Minecraft. And, you know, I just read an article today about a guy who's making $500,000 a month. He's in his 20s and he's just doing it by streaming, you know, playing games. Like,
crazy.
I don't know about you, but I should have really, I may reconsider it still, but I mean, $500,000 a month to do that is pretty, pretty incredible.
And
to,
months.
Exactly. And to be in your 20s, I mean, I could work 1 month and be happy. I wouldn't even need a couple months. I could do 1 month and then, you know, vacation for the rest of the year. So, but there's so many new options, I think, out there. You know, when we were in school, it was you went to school. If you wanted to really get into IT, you got a computer science degree and, you know, and then you became a developer. So, but now there's so many great options. And I think you're right. I think it's about, and you know, educating and talking to, you know, kids about it, because there's a lot of options. You don't have to just be, you know, a programmer. You don't have to be, you know, a computer science, you know, nerd or whatever. You can have a lot of different ways to get into the industry.
And so, it really forces them to think about problems differently. That's what I like is they have to get through that kind of if then else sort of, that's really what we're going for. If you can just understand those kind of dependencies in how you solve problems. I mean, whether you're coding or whether you're just working on a business process, it's the same kind of thought process that you go through. And that helps them a lot.
Right.
Just getting exposed to some kind of IT logic.
Yeah, I hear you. And back to what we were saying earlier, I think that's something that's very difficult to teach. I don't think you can necessarily teach problem solving or analytical skills. I mean, it's really working on that and developing it. It's not like I can tell you how to get from, you know, A to Z. You really have to try to figure that out on your own. And the paths aren't always the same. There's different paths to get there.
Sure. Totally agree.
So, Joel, as somebody, I mean, you've been a serial entrepreneur for a while. I mean, you came from Anderson, but since then you've done a lot of other things and created, you know, several successful companies. So tell me and tell our listeners, I guess, what advice you would give and what are some of those lessons learned? It sounds like you shared a few of those already, you know, talking about how, you know, your first company and now your second company and culture obviously is one of the big factors in that and maybe the factor, but what are some of the other lessons learned that you would share?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, it sounds simple, but you need a plan, right? and there are there are several tools out there that can help you with this. But one way to make just the overall experience of running a business easier is to follow a plan. We use something called Rockefeller Habits, which are it's 10 habits that John D. Rockefeller really believed in how he grew his companies. And that's a scaling up philosophy. There's also one called EOS, which is Entrepreneurial Operating System. They're kind of similar and they're really based on three things. One is having meeting rhythms. So we have a daily huddle. Everybody in the organization participates in a daily huddle. It takes about 10 minutes in the morning. And then we have weekly leadership huddles. So one of the things is making sure you've got rhythms. The second thing is having an aligned leadership team and making sure that you've got a group that is driving your business forward. And the final thing is having a critical number or two. And that's really how you determine the health of your organization. There's a lot of things that make that up, but what it does is it really allows you to get your organization in a, you know, in an easily communicated plan so that everyone understands what you're trying to accomplish. Part of building that plan is identifying your core values and your purpose. And those should drive everything. Your hiring, your firing, our business purpose is the best job ever. And with that, we want our people, that means something different for everyone, mm-hmm. but we want our people when they're sitting down with their grandkids someday and describing what their best job was in their career, we want them talking about this place. And so we believe that, you know, I mean, you've got to own that. So that along with our six core values is really how we run the business. And unfortunately, a lot of times people hear mission statement or values or whatever, and it gets sort of just kind of brushed aside because for a lot of years, it was just something to hang on the wall. But if you don't do that and you actually take this stuff to heart and you actually make your decisions based on it, you'd be shocked at how much it really simplifies things. So making sure that you've got that. And then the final thing I'd say is just authenticity. You got to be you as you are investing in people, as you are recruiting, as you're working with your clients, just be you. I think we've gotten, especially, I still run across people like this where it's kind of like Gordon Gekko, where they think that if they yell at people, right, that's how you manage yeah. well. And that's how you create it. That's just so not true. And you it's the polar opposite of that, that you really want. You want people to see that you care and that you want, you know, want to see them grow, want to create an opportunity for them to grow. And if you do that, I think people will believe it. They'll trust you. And when you get to that level of trust and vulnerability that you need, then that's really when things just take off and you can focus on, you know, the stuff that grows your business. So, have a plan, whether it's Rockefeller Habits or something else, make sure you've got values and purpose and then just be authentic. I think that will serve you really well.
And invest in your people.
Do it. All day long.
Joel, I am looking forward to being able to get on a plane again soon and coming to hang out in Texas. So, and visiting you and seeing your company there. So thank you so much. In the meantime, we'll have to do this virtually from now on, but thank you for coming on the Ivy podcast with me and sharing your insights. It's been great.
Absolute pleasure, Courtney. Look forward to getting on the road again as well. And we'll see you in the airport.
That's right. And if nothing else, we'll see you in Miami, right?
Yes, ma'am. I can't wait.
All right. Cheers. Thanks, Joel.
We really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to rate, subscribe, and leave a review on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.